Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, dear listeners? It is I, William Powell, the sage of the stage, a man you can trust. I'm the Alpha, the Omega, and the Incubator. I'm none other than the king of DC Media, the one and the only host of Inside Acting. Welcome to another show. We're going to have a fun show tonight. Let me remind you that Inside Acting is brought to you by DC Actors Examiner, which is most easily found by Googling DC Actors Examiner. It's a great column. Tonight, I welcome actor, writer, producer Michael Mack to the show, who at one time was a writer for Star Trek, and he is currently in the stage play Butterfly here in the DMV area. And later on tonight, we're going to have Angela Sibbles, who's going to tell us what's going on in the acting scene down south in Atlanta. So let me bring in Mr. Michael Mack. I see he is patiently waiting.
How are you, William?
Hey,
thank you for
Michael,
having me
how you
on
doing?
Your show.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, man. How you doing tonight?
Very good. Things are going well, yeah.
That's good, man. It's good. I'm so glad you joined us. So tell me what's going on with Butterfly.
Well, Butterfly is playing at the Tacoma Park Recreation Center. It's Wanderlust Theater Lab, and this is a professional theater company using a community space. And we're at the Tacoma Park Community Center Theater, 7500 Maple Avenue in Tacoma Park, Maryland. So we'll be on tomorrow night, 8 p.m., and then we have a Saturday matinee and a Saturday evening show.
That's pretty good, man. So tell me about who you're playing.
I play a character named Todd. Now, this play is a real interesting piece of absurdist existential angst theater. Lots
oh, wow.
of issues,
okay.
ideas, and angst going on with this play by my good friend Tom Block, who is a great painter and also a published author, a scholar. Very accomplished guy. And so I play a character named Todd, who is described in the play as a self-appointed prophet. He has one disciple. And this is the last day of his life.
Interesting. So does this take place in modern day, or is it biblical times, or time
well,
travel?
No,
what's going on?
It takes place modern day. Yes, it does take place modern day, but let's say that linear time, the play is not bound by linear time. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of figured you would say that. For some reason, I thought you were going to say that.
Well, you know, you can always do time travel of the mind, you know. So.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So now, how did you prepare for the role?
Well, that's a really excellent question, because basically what happened is that the actor who was originally playing Todd had to drop out of the show, and
oh.
I am the last-minute replacement, and I do perform with script in hand.
So how is that? Have you done that before?
Have I ever done that before in a full production? No.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I've been in several staged readings, of course, where all the actors have script in hand. But I've never before been in a full production where I needed to, you know, basically replace somebody at the last moment and have do it on book, as we say. Yeah. This is a first time.
So what's been the reaction of the audience?
What I have heard is that people tend to respond to it. I see, Todd is also writing a book. think of it as gospel according to Todd, right?
Uh-huh.
And this book is a very important part of the play. And so I relate to the script as if it's the book. And I have what I've been hearing is that it works. So, you know, we go out there every night and show must go on.
That's right. Yeah, the show must go on. So now, did you consider yourself a method actor?
That's another excellent question. Do I consider myself a method actor? I don't know. I don't know. I just do my best to commit myself to the character's reality while I'm with the character.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I guess that's really the trend in acting. The last 5 or 10 years. I mean, there's books like Howard Guskin's book, How to Stop Acting. They
mm-hmm.
say, Don't Let Me Catch You Acting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like, you know, it's almost like Bruce Lee. He kind of invented his own style of martial arts. It's sort of like you take everything that makes sense to you and just make it work.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's the way things are now. I mean, I think we're moving away from the orthodoxy on acting. I mean, I think that's really the way the business is going.
How do you feel about that?
I think it's a good thing. I think whatever mm-hmm. works, whatever floats mm-hmm. the boat and works, I think that's whatever gets you there in the moment. I mean, I think we all agree that, you know, if you're in the moment, that's what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
But now, when you take a look at, I just want to get your take on this. You know, when you're watching television or film, and you take a look at actors who are going for, let's say realism, for lack of a better word.
Right.
Do you ever miss the actors of an older style? Where, let's say, more of the craft would show, you know, actors that were more technicians than from the gut. Do you ever miss those guys?
I never even really... It's just a good question, Michael. I think... I guess the short answer is no.
No?
I mean, just off the top of my head, yeah. I
uh-huh.
mean, yeah. It depends. I mean, I guess the Stanislavski method would be a little bit better for, oh, I guess maybe some Shakespeare, or depends on what it is, what the material is. But, you know, what kind of material it is, basically. But,
I agree with that. It really does depend on the material, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. And the play that you're doing, it just sounds to me like it's really... You know, it's definitely not something that's you can pigeonhole very easily. And you got to have very open mind how you approach it.
I have fun every night, you know,
doing
this show. And part of what I really enjoy about it is that no matter how quote unquote real you want to be with it, or methody as you might want to be with it, it is, I think, fair to say, somewhat an absurdist piece. And so there is a natural pulling you out of yourself that it does, and there's a fair amount of the characters commenting on their own reality. So it's nicely larger than life, and that's refreshing. That's a lot of fun, you know. To have something that is so large, right? That has so much room that you can not only be in the moment but also comment on the moment.
Yeah, that's something you don't always get a chance to do that. You know, it's sort of like, you're either in the moment or you're not, and there's nothing in the script to indicate that you're even commenting on it or even acknowledging on it. And I guess the only way to tell that you really reached a moment in time there is just by your presence and how you deliver the line and just being there, and it's sort of like a, it's like an intangible almost, like
yeah,
the audience can see it and you can feel it, basically. You got to feel it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I miss a little bit in the old school style of acting. You know, when you would watch people like Laurence Olivier and John Gielgud and Peter O'Toole and Richard Burton, you know, in their prime, there was something about them, no matter how committed to the moment, you know, they may have been. There was also something about them that was large enough. There was enough room that they could also comment on the moment, and I miss some of that. I miss some of that in much of what we see today.
Yeah. So let's step back in time a little bit here. So now, how did you become a writer on Star Trek? Is there a funny
you want
story?
The story, huh? You want the story?
Sure. Yeah, that's
okay.
What we're here for.
All right. Well, it's a little bit of a story. Just
okay.
You know, fair warning. It's a little bit of a story.
Okay. Go ahead.
Around 1990, I said, you know, I want to go to Hollywood, and I wasn't really sure how, you know, with the opportunities that were available at the time, I wasn't really sure how to act my way there. So I decided I would write my way there.
Hmm.
And I sat down, and Sid Field, the great screen acting guru, had, I believe, 3 books at the time, screenplay, screenwriter's handbook, and selling a screenplay. So I read all 3 in the same day. And then came up with this idea and started writing my screenplay. And this was a screenplay about the 1831 Nat Turner Rebellion, called Nat. Okay. And so I started writing my screenplay, and then somebody said to me, you know, you ought to go take a class maybe at a place like the Writer Center in Bethesda. And, you know, right, you know, ignorant me, right? And so I'm going, well, I've read these books. I know what, you know, I know what I'm doing. I've read 3 books. And they went, no, listen, you know, not just for learning, but then also who you might meet. And so I took this screenwriting class. And thank God the instructor was Dr. Richard Blum, who had been an executive at Columbia Pictures and also head of the screenwriting program at Maryland University. And one day as class is ending, he says, listen, I want you to stay after class and, you know, and talk with me, you know, just hang out for a minute. So everybody left, and he says, look, you've got something, you know, now here's what you do. I want you to enter the Nickel Fellowships in Screenwriting Competition, the biggest screenwriting competition in the world, sponsored by the Motion Picture Academy. He says, I want you to write the best scripts you can, enter this competition, do well, and then write Star Trek Next Generation, because they are, of all the shows in Hollywood, they're the friendliest to outside writers, and good luck. Well, I followed what he told me, and it worked.
Wow.
And so I went to Star Trek as a writing intern in September of 1993.
So it took you about, what, 3 years?
Right. That whole thing took about 3 years, exactly. After I did well in the competition, it was they got 3,813 scripts that year. And I survived the first cut, which was a cut down to 186 scripts. So that was doing rather well. And so I wrote Star Trek, and in a couple of weeks I got a letter back saying, you know, congratulations, you know, send your script here. And I did, and didn't hear anything for a year.
Mm.
It took a, well, you know, when I got there, when I got there, I saw that literally they had scripts floor to ceiling, you know, and, you know, I'm grateful I made it through.
You probably have been asked this question a lot, but what's the key to a good screenplay? Is it structure? Is it dialogue? Is it all of the above? Is it, I mean, why do you think you made that first cut?
Oh, by the grace of God.
Okay. You're an honest man, Michael.
That's an easy answer right there.
You're an honest man.
I'm completely lucky. I mean, the first time that I was alone with the writing staff, Brandon Braga, sort of one of the head writers, sort of put his arm around me and he said, "Can you believe that your script was once in one of these piles?" You know, I think honestly the most important thing in writing a script that is going to move somebody is that first you have to be moved. You know, I wrote this this screenplay about the Nat Turner Rebellion because it was the story on my mind that was just, you know, bursting and wanting to be told, right? I did a fair amount of research and lived with it, right? It was the last thing that I did before going to bed, the first thing I did in the morning. You know, I was on fire for it, right? And that fire translates, you know? And so I would say really that the most important element is your passion.
I think you're absolutely right about that. That's a very good line. That fire translates. It translates, you know. People can see it.
It does. One of the things, my internship was sponsored by the Writers Guild of America. Thank you, Writers Guild. And one of my duties as an intern, a temporary member of the writing staff, was to read scripts that were submitted to the show.
Mm-hmm.
We were supposed to read five a week. I wanted to make an impression, so I read 20, you know, mm-hmm. And you do coverage, you know, you write up little reviews of the scripts and so forth. And a lot of the scripts that came through were people trying to be clever or people trying to be funny or people trying to, you know, You know, you could see them say, it's almost like you could see the writer say, this is going to be really cool, or this is really going to get them, or whatever, right?
Right.
But very few things came through, just clean, passionate ideas, you know? Just passion, pure love of what you're doing, you know? A love of telling the story, right? And I would say to anybody out there who's thinking about writing or struggling with writing, you know, the most important ingredient is your passion.
Yeah, I think that's really the key to so many things in life in general, and also especially the arts. Passion, that's something that you can't escape it. If you don't have it, you might as well quit.
And that's it. I mean, and there it is, isn't it? You know, because...
Yeah.
You know, you can't buy it, you can't borrow it, you can't steal it. You know, you've got it or you don't.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you know, I took a course once from David Emerson Tony. I don't know if you know him. He's a actor and playwright here in the DMV area. But he used to write for Living Color back in the day. And he, according to him, I kind of disagree with him a little bit. He said that, he said you will run out of ideas. So how did you feel about that? Is that a reality that you saw out there in Hollywood, that people would come in there and then they'd have a few good ideas and they'd kind of like start running out of ideas?
That's interesting. Well, you know, remember... You know, when I came to Star Trek, this was season 7.
Okay.
This was season 7.
I got you. Okay, I see where you're going.
So sure, these writers at a certain point were kind of scratching their heads going, you know, well, what else are we going to do with these characters, right?
Right.
I can't speak for for the gentleman who he's speaking from his own experience and observation.
Right.
But I really think it depends on the situation. You know, if you're doing a show, even something as creative as Star Trek has boundaries. You know, shows have guidelines. They have what's called Bibles, you know. And so within that framework, you might be a writer on Star Trek and have, you know, 1,000 other sci-fi ideas. But in terms of this framework, you know, you can reach a point where you say, what are we going to do that's new?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
because even with that level of creativity, you still have boundaries, right? Because that's what makes the show what it is that it has its own integrity.
Huh. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk about, now you've got this picture on your Facebook profile, and you're a Romulan. So how did you go from writer to Romulan?
Well,
that's what I
remember.
Want to know.
The goal of going to Hollywood was to act.
Okay.
Right. And so here I was, moved across country, had never been there, didn't know anybody out there or anything. And I had 6 weeks of work as an intern, and I said to myself, you know, well, if I can turn 6 weeks of work into 7, then I'll stay for a while, right?
Okay.
And so it was in the last week of my internship, week 6, that here was this episode we were developing called The Pegasus. And there was this Romulan character who was written as female and presumably white. And I said to Jerry Taylor, the executive producer, I said, you know, I, one of the executive producers, I said, I'd like to audition for this part. And she says, well, you know, you're right that the character does not have to be female.
Uh-huh.
But we've never had a black Romulan.
Hmm.
And I said, but you could, because in Star Trek V, when Spock relives his birth, the Vulcan midwife is black, the Vulcans and Romulans are cousins, and so you can have a black Romulan. And so she says, well, I'll tell you tomorrow, right? I bet she checked the tape. She came back the next day and she said, okay, you got your audition.
Hmm.
And this is what was important about that year that it took to hear about my script, because that year I prepared for a yes. You know, no requires nothing, right? So I prepared for a yes, and that year I studied everything that was Star Trek. I even went to a convention. You know, everything that was Star Trek, I was on top of it. And so my opportunity came. You know, the opportunity came, and I did the audition. LeVar Burton was directing, and he liked the idea. So I went back after my audition. I went back to my writer's cubicle, and 45 minutes later, got the call to go into Jerry Taylor's office. I went in, and she said, you know, congratulations, you got the part. So they wrote an additional scene. First, it was a one-scene part. They wrote an additional scene so that I got to take on Picard twice, you know, and I did pretty good, you know. I became the first black Romulan in all of Star Trek's history.
That's fascinating.
And the first time we shot it, they put me in the standard Romulan makeup, which I had no problems with. I came out looking rather Asian, you know, and I thought it was interesting. And And then I got a phone call from Jerry Taylor, and she said, you know, I will not run the risk of offending the African American community by having the first black Romulan in Star Trek's history be a black man in whiteface. So we are going to shoot it again. And this time what they did was they came up with a black Romulan makeup, which was based on my skin tone.
That's good. That's what's up.
It's interesting. I mean, it was a fascinating experience all the way.
Wow. That's what's up.
That's how that happened. Yeah. You know, and then, you know, so when I was done shooting, you know, LeVar Burton says, ladies and gentlemen, Michael Mack, the first black Romulan in Star Trek history. Words I will never forget.
So you were only in, how many episodes were you in?
I was in one episode of Star Trek Next Generation, and then I also played a member of Picard's crew in the first Next Generation film called Star Trek Generations. I play Ensign Hayes in that.
Wow, I'm still stuck on when you said prepare for a yes. I mean, I think that's really what propelled you right there.
You know, there was, and I got very lucky with that too. When I sent the script off, of course, I went through all the usual stuff. You're obsessing about it. You're checking the P.O. box every day. You know, you're worrying yourself sick. And I read in the newspaper an interview with Bernie Shaw, the first black anchor at CNN.
Uh-huh.
And in this interview, he's talking about good luck. And he said, good luck is the crossroads where preparation and opportunity meet.
Right,
now,
right.
You can't always control opportunity, but preparation is all up to you. And when I read that, I said, hey, I've been playing a fool's game here. You know, I gotta, right? You know what I mean? I got a man up here. I need to be preparing. And that's what I did. That's what I did.
Right, because if you're prepared and when the opportunity comes, it comes knocking, you're ready.
That's right. That's right. And it came down to the wire. I mean, I had no idea where work was going to come from in week 7. But it came right down to the last week of my internship, and there was the opportunity.
That's fantastic, man. That's just fantastic. I love hearing these kind of stories, man. They're fascinating. Success takes a lot. It takes a lot that people don't see.
Yes. You know, and so then, you know, I mean, thank goodness what I was able to do on the last day of my internship, or rather, you know, internship, then week 7 we shot, right? And then I was able to drive right down Beverly Boulevard and get an agent. You know, getting representation was then no problem, and it was preparation. That was the smartest thing on my part was being prepared. Yes.
Yeah, because that's,
you know,
really. Yeah, like I say, I mean, when it rains, it pours. You know, you had that one success, and then, you know, you deal from a position of strength. Because listening to your story, that's really, I think your story is the opposite of what most people do who wind up failing at something like this. Is you sort of, you came at it from a position of strength. I'm going to prepare, I'm going to leave no stone unturned, know as much as I have to know, do as much as I have to do, work as hard as I need to work, and then just roll with it. And then at each point, you're from a position of strength. So, I mean, even to get to become a writer on the show, you had to face so many hurdles, and you beat that. And then this whole thing with you know, playing a Romulan, you're able to deal from a position of strength. And then once you became a Romulan, then you, like I say, you had no trouble getting an agent. You know why? Because you already had success before then. So I think that's key right there. You know, success leads to success.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for that commentary. Yeah. It's just, you know, the thing is failure requires nothing. You know?
Right.
What if they say no, so what? You know, I mean, what does that require of you? Nothing. So if your goal is to win, prepare, prepare, prepare.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so we're coming up on about the last minute for your segment. Is there any special projects you have in the works?
Well, I am in the process of creating the documents for a series that I'm doing on spec, meaning I don't have a deal yet, but I am writing the series Bible and two pilot episodes.
Okay, okay. You're at liberty to discuss a little bit more about it, or
sure. So
the
go
title
ahead.
Or all that.
Well, it is presently called Charlestown, and it takes place in the 1880s in a predominantly black Midwestern town, and you know, so it will happen in the context of this history that often gets overlooked. The fact that between 1865 and 1920, blacks created nearly 60 towns and settlements across the Western Indian Territory, and by 1910, there were 29 predominantly black towns in Oklahoma alone. So this takes place in Oklahoma during that time period in the 1880s.
Yeah, I know there are a lot of blacks had some very prosperous towns out there in Oklahoma.
Absolutely, yes, yes. So, you know, this is. I'm very excited about this project. I have a real passion for it.
Well, I have no doubt, Michael, that you're going to be successful with that and anything else you put your mind to. I mean, as we've said over and over tonight, you have, like I say, the preparation, the hard work, and. Coming from a position of strength, I think that's really key too. So that way, by that I mean you're not walking around with your hat in your hand begging. You have something that somebody else. You have something to offer, basically.
Oh well, thank you very much. Thank you. Very kind words. Very kind words. Thank you.
All right, Michael. Yeah. So anything else you want to publicize? Any websites or anything like that, or anything about the
no,
show?
No, this is all good, you know, if I can just return to part of, you know, what you're saying, because again, I hope to encourage folks who might be listening and maybe even struggling with a creative dream. You know, when I got started in this business, I didn't like, you know, I was saying no to more auditions than I was taking. I was turning down more parts than I was accepting because I just did not like this stereotypical portrayal, you know, of black people, particularly black men. And so then I said, you know, you better learn how to write. And then it was, well, you better learn how to direct. Well, you better learn how to produce. And I just want to encourage people and say, you know, going to Star Trek was a dream. Dreams can and do come true. So, you know, go for your dream, have passion, and stick with it. Stick with it.
On that note, man, I'm gonna have to let you go. I got another guest coming on the show, man. Well, thanks for dialing in and being part of the show, man. I'm definitely gonna have you on again, and you've just been a real inspiration, my brother.
Well, thank you very, very much. I greatly appreciate it. I've enjoyed it tremendously, and I look forward to the next time.
Okay, man.
Okay.
All right.
Take
have
care.
A good night. All right.
All right. You too. All right.
All right. Bye. Bye. And we're going to bring on Angela. Hey, Angela, is that you?
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. So what's going on down south?
A little bit of drama on a reality show. Chattanooga Half Divas and the Chattanooga Sexy Men.
Okay, and okay. So when is that going to be airing?
Coming out in a month or so. Right now, I'm getting Are we going to do a great workout?
I'm kind of losing you there. Hello?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, you're still there. Okay. Yeah, so where's it going to air now?
In Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay, okay, all right. So tell me a little bit more about the show.
A little bit about the show. Teach women how to be sexy, be outgoing, confident. I just got it going on, and I'm going to say that's why the donkey booty and the senior booty, mine's called the sexy booty, and it's going to be a great workout and show you how to move very slowly, being very sexy and doing a great workout. And with this Chattanooga House Diva, once we get through shooting a video and, you know, take it worldwide, because it's going to be very get rid of Cha-Cha Diva Top Show and Talk Hot Baby.
So now, where did you get your talent for the show? Where did you get them?
I'm a nationwide talent scout as well. Like I said, for models and actors. The story in the world. Salon or get my hair done or whatever, I see something that would fit my reality show, and I go and ask them, hey, you want to get in Tennessee Valley Girls? And like, why not? You think you're sexy? Of course I'm sexy. So here we go. Nobody never looked at Chattanooga, Tennessee, so I want to put Chattanooga, Tennessee on the map.
Okay, but so now you have, say, so you have a nationwide talent agency. So now how do people submit? Do they submit through videos? Did you interview people by phone or video conference, or how did you do it?
Well, it's on the website, also on Aaron Marcus' Facebook page, How to Be a Model. You just go to www.howtobeamodel and log in, how to register in. And also we have different workshops that be on the website that you don't have to go out and, you know, try to travel to be a part of it. And also I put on big showcases for models and actors, and I go out and search for them and grab out the agency all around the world and say, hey, I got something for you, and there you go.
Okay, all right. That's good. That's what's up. So now you're saying that you wanted to put Chattanooga on the map. I mean, what's the scene like down there? I mean, what's going on down there now? Is it kind of dead, or has it got, they got stage shows, they got, what they got down there?
We have a couple of stage shows, little nightclubs where people try to perform and everything, and I try to put up a lot of events and stuff, so teenagers have something to do. I shoot videos, they show me their talent and everything, I try to put it out there. I either work with homeless people in the community, try to help them with low self-esteem, how to, you know, be, you know, motivate whatever you do. And also me being a Tennessee Valley girl, I'm a singer, and I'm trying to do my thing. Once I put myself out there, I put Chattanooga on the map, because the reason why is other talented people out there, and, you know, you follow me, you would get there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's step back, Angela, to, like, how you got involved in the entertainment business. How'd you get started?
Let's see. When I was 3 years old, I used to perform talent shows, all kind of talent things they have out. I started with Janet Jackson playing a role when she was on Good Time, when she was flirting with JJ, and yeah. So I still got that in me as well. And also I'm working on a new dance. It's the Queen of Pop versus Michael Jackson, his lover, Queen of Pop with the pink diamond glove. That's me. So I'm hot, so I dance too. So I have all kind of different talents. So I know everybody been looking for me. Where have you been, Tennessee Valley girl? And now I'm here, and I'm ready to shine.
Okay. All right. Okay. So how did you start your talent agency?
I met this lady. I was out at the mall, and She liked my look. She liked the way I talk. I like, oh, really? She said, you a go-getter. You have the kind of personality. You can go out and get those models and actors. And the name of the place called Studios in the Mountain. Her name is Deanne. And she taught me how to search for people in malls and pull them in and help them, you know, get noticed and everything.
Okay, so that's how you developed a keen eye.
Right. I start taking notes and everything, and now I start being on me, my own boss. So I'm doing my own thing.
Okay. Okay, so how long have you been doing your own thing?
I started about 2008 when I started the Tennessee Valley Girl name. Reason why I came up with Tennessee Valley Girl, because I was born in Tennessee. We live in a valley, and I'm a girl. And then I came with the initial TVG. I said, well, I started my own entertainment company business called TVG Entertainment. So there you go. So those are my ideals. You know, like you said, you know, follow your dreams, your goals, whatever you want to do, and just put those little puzzles together and make it happen and just grow.
That's what's up. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. It's a lot of... Well, a lot of people realize it's not a whole, it's a whole lot of work. A lot of people don't want to do the work. I mean, that's what it comes down to as well. You got to have the vision, but you got to have the perspiration as well.
Right. You have to be into it like me. I'm into it. I be on the streets. I be selling CDs. I be talking to people and singing to people. And, I mean, just showing off.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. So now
so
you sing. Have you cut an album?
I'm working on three other new songs. A song called Country Heart Sweet. I had lost my fiance 3 months ago. He had grandma seizures. And it's a new slow song I put together, kind of country, a little bit remix. Also, I wrote a true story book that I want to put out. Also, I got to finish with an R&B song called I'm Sexy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a hot song, too, called I'm Sexy.
Mm. Mm.
So I do hip-hop music. I do country. I do rock. I do a little jazz. Also, like I told you, I'm a dancer as well. I try to work on this Queen of Pop versus my little diva.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
So I'm just waiting to really just shine so everybody can see what I'm working with worldwide. Also, I got that baby little whining voice that everybody is listening to. So just get ready for Valley Girl and the Chattanooga House Diva, because we got hot drama in the city. So just get ready for it.
Hot drama in the city.
Yeah, hot drama in the city. Atlanta House Wine. I talked. You know, Peter on Atlanta House Wine, I told him, I came down to Atlanta, I said, look, I came out with a Chattanooga housewife. I said, no, that don't sound right. We need single women out there called a Chattanooga House Diva, because if I'm sexy, you have to be sexy too. So.
Okay, so tell me a little, go ahead and tell me where, we're coming up on about 60 seconds, so put out there how people can find the show, everything they need to know about the show and the structure of it, and anything else you want to put out there.
Okay, you can just go on my Facebook of Angela Sibbles or Tennessee Valley Girl. Also, it will be a video coming up about another month or so. I'm going to say April the 1st. The video will be out, so you can check it out on YouTube as well. Also, go to www.TennesseeValleyGirl.com and check me out. But I make sure it will be out, the word will be out, so you can catch me. But I'm Tennessee Valley Girl. I'm sexy. I'm sexy. You never met a chick like me. So just check out the Chattanooga House Divas and my sexy men. And not just my sexy men in Chattanooga, but all around the world. So I'm searching for all kind of sexy men and sexy women. And next show, part two, I'll let you know the reason why I'm still not the Chattanooga House Divas. So just get ready. And also, and also you can reach me at 423-704-7267. You have talent? Hey, come get on the TVG Entertainment, because I'm looking for background dancers, singers, and a whole nine yards. So get with me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Angela. Well, it was good to have you on the show, and I wish you much success with your show.
Yes, please do.
Okay. All right. You have a great night.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And I just want to put out there that hopefully next week, dear listeners, we will have on the show none other than Brian Dragonuk himself. Anybody here in the DMV area who's an actor knows who Brian Dragonuk is. He's just the godfather and mentor of actors in this area. He has a prominent website on that posts jobs for actors here in the DMV area. So look forward to that. And I'm getting ready to sign off here. And I'm going to leave you tonight with the words of Mr. Wayne Dyer, who has been quoted as saying, "You are not stuck where you are unless you decide to be." Good night.
Piedra en el mar.